Are you looking to make a podcast? Well, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First off, it's free. Nothing is better than free. Am I right? Anchor provides creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more services. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, which is very refreshing for very fresh, new podcasts looking to get their start. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Welcome back to the swamp, my friends. Sorry for my absence recently. I've been taking some time off for some mental health and some other physical ailments. And just to make things even worse, I broke my thumb just a couple of days ago. So now it's making it even more harder to make videos. Never to worry though. Today I have 5 brand new scary stories coming straight from viewers just like you. If you have a story that you would like to share in a future video, be sure to send your story in at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that help keep this show going. Joining me today are my 2 good friends, Southern Cannibal and Maschino. Be sure to check out their channels with the link down below if you enjoy their voices. Now, without further ado, be sure to hit that like button, subscribe if you haven't done so already, and get ready for some truly disturbing, scary stories. When I was in 5th grade, I had a best friend. I don't want to share her real name, so I'll just call her Hannah. We did everything together, and at this age, we still played imaginary games together and played with dolls. It was around this time Twilight started getting incredibly popular, and the movie was just about to come out, I think. We both read all of the books in less than a week, and were entranced by them. It was really the first time we were introduced to vampires, besides seeing kids dressed up as them for Halloween. But things got very strange. We decided to create imaginary friends for each other, of course, and made them vampires. I remember naming mine Alex and hers was named Alice. I was very attached to the idea of mine. We made them so detailed, even choosing their favorite colors and animals. Hannah made Alice's favorite animal a crow. Remember that, because it comes back. Hannah, out of nowhere, decided she hated Alice and wanted to change to a different imaginary friend. And that's when things started getting crazy. One day we were in her room playing with dolls and she went pale looking in her mirror. I looked and saw that she was looking at her closet, which there was a face with a huge grin staring at us. We looked in the closet and there was nothing there. Not even a doll or anything that could explain what we had seen. And the description of the face was exactly what she claimed Alice's features were. We put the thought out of our minds, deciding that it was just our minds playing tricks on us. Hannah had gotten a new cat, and that cat was terrified to come out from under furniture. This was a perfectly healthy cat. One day, Hannah came home from school to her mom telling her that they found the cat dead in her room. I had a treehouse in my backyard, and we turned it into a clubhouse with beanbags and comic books and art supplies. My backyard at the time was pretty big. We had crows in my town, obviously, but I had never seen a lot around my house before. Hannah was telling me that she was scared because she thought Alice was after her because she had replaced her. I was skeptical. I desperately wanted to believe that there was some kind of paranormal creature or something out there, but no way that this was real. As she was talking, I kept saying it was impossible, that it was just her mind playing tricks on her. I was terrified to admit maybe something was going on. I got up to go back inside my house to get us snacks because we were planning on spending the night out in the treehouse. When I looked out the window in the treehouse, there were probably at least 50, if not 100 crows in my backyard. After that, we freaked out and Hannah said she would be Alice's friend again. We spent the night together scared to death, and then after that, nothing else ever seemed to happen. She got a new cat, and everything seemed to be fine and happily running around the house. We didn't see anything in her mirror anymore, and I never saw that amount of crows in my backyard ever again. I know that everyone will say that we were young and it was all in our minds, but I have never felt that gut-wrenching fear like that in my entire life. I don't believe we were just scaring ourselves. This was more than that. It felt real. It was scary. And even when someone mentions the words imaginary friends to me, a chill runs down my spine and I am filled with horror.
A little explanation before I start. Way back, before most people had access to the series of tubes that we call the internet, we had something called chat lines. Chat lines were phone numbers that you could call and talk to people in kind of a group call. And well, women never had to pay to call in. The one that my friends and I used, we would have to make a brief introduction to verify you were female. Once in the chat, you could speak and people would send you recorded private messages. Anyway, I come from a small town of about 15,000 people. Not exactly everybody knows everybody, but not unlike it either. My neighbor Jimmy happened to be a cop. My mother was a nurse who also had a substance abuse issue. She worked constantly to feed her addiction, and I was pretty much all on my own. Like trouble kids tend to do, I found others that were just like me. We were basically a group of poor at-risk kids with really shady parents. We were pretty much free range. I was 17 years old at the time and had entirely given up on school. Instead, I opted to drop out and get a job so that I could leave the town and go to college. I got a really crappy retail job that paid crap. So I had to supplement my income somehow. I think you know where this is headed. I decided to use the chat line to meet men and make money. Cash up front. Everyone knew my age was 17 and most of them didn't really even flinch. One of my friends decided that she wanted in on the action, and I was totally against it, but I mean, I couldn't really stop her. We all used that chat line. Kim was about 16 years old and would not tell him how old she was. I did warn people though whenever I could, and this made her pretty angry. She actually stopped speaking to me for a couple of weeks. Meanwhile, I'm at the bank trying to make a deposit into my account, and my neighbor Jimmy was right behind me and he sees how much I'm depositing. Then he asks me if my job at the food store had given me a substantial raise. Well, the jig was up and I decided to come clean. I decided to get a second job in telemarketing off my feet, and all was pretty fine. I had a solid day off a week or so later, and decided to go where all my friends hung out when not in school. When I get there, Kim was there as well, and she told me she stopped too. Apparently she stopped because her 36-year-old boyfriend John that she'd met on the chat line told her it was too dangerous. So here's this 36-year-old man with about 3 kids and no job. He was really dirty and unshaven. His clothes were dirty, he smoked like it was his last day on earth, and he drank even more. He'd buy everyone alcohol and pot. Some of Kim's friends wanted to try coke, and just guess who helped. I tried to warn Kim and her friends about this guy, and how I really didn't feel good about him. I felt like John was a budding cult leader. Our part of the country seems to be host to such weirdos. I actually went to Jimmy's door many times and lost my resolve. But honestly, I was kind of scared of John. I was really starting to show my age at this point. I'd never felt so young and inexperienced before in my life. What really scared me though was that things were moving along so quickly. He was now dating Kim and all of her friends at the same time, and one was only like 14 years old. And the crazy thing? They all knew it too. Drugs and drinking were a pretty constant thing. I heard from one of Kim's friends that he was dealing really hard drugs and that he actually had a walk-in closet that was full of weapons, and apparently he told them that he would kill for them. And then he shows up at my door with all the girlfriends in tow, completely all stoned out of their minds. He's apparently really upset with me. I'd made Kim and her girlfriends really upset because I wasn't paying much attention to Kim anymore, and apparently I asked one of the girlfriends a little too much about him. They thought that I liked him. He told me he would give me money, and that if I continued to mess with his ladies by being a crappy friend, he was apparently going to kill me and then throw me down a mineshaft. He also went on to tell me that all of his girlfriends got gifts and drugs as well as protection, and I should really make the best of it. I told all of them to go away, and then I shut my door, being really careful to lock all of the doors and windows. I just cried all night long. I was about 2 months away from being 18, and I already had my GED at this point. I just really needed a bit more money. I didn't have enough to save up and leave quite yet, or I think I would have been on a bus that night. Why I thought closing a door would have worked, I really don't know. He was back later that night trying to get in through a window. He was high, very high. He was screaming his lungs out that he wanted to rape me. He actually said, and I quote,
"I'm going to screw you until you bleed to death."
I actually called the cops right in front of him. I was screaming and crying. I had really hoped that all of this was loud enough to get Jimmy's attention, but he wasn't home. He realized that I really did call the police, and then he looked at me and then said,
"The next time I see your whore mother, she's getting rat poison."
So, remember how I said that we're kind of like a town where everyone knows everyone? Yeah, he dealt my mother her drugs. And I actually later found out that he offered my mother a discount if I were to be his girlfriend. The police called my mom at work, and she said she didn't want anyone talking to me until she got home, since she'd be home in about 5 minutes anyway. The police weren't happy, and they knew something was up. When she finally got home, she quickly took me into my room and then squeezed my arm, telling me, "You better tell the cops that you were just imagining things, or John's going to rat me out to the hospital. We really can't have this right now. And is having a boyfriend really that bad?" I was absolutely speechless, but I did what she said. The cops didn't believe me. They knew something was going on. The female cop said that Jimmy told her to tell me hey and gave me her card. After they left, my mother took the card and then ripped it up, like that was actually going to matter. She knew that Jimmy was our neighbor. I thought that maybe things were not as bad as I thought they were, but the cops knew something. The very next morning, Jimmy wasn't home, and I had to go to my telemarketing job. It's in an old strip mall. There's a receptionist who gets the only window, and the rest of us were in a boiler room with no windows and an actual boiler, or water heater, I'm not really sure. In other words, I could not see out. Management made us park in the back. Well, after work, guess who was back there? John and the gang. As soon as I see them, the girls are charging me, and then they jump me. They get me all the way on the ground, and they're kicking and punching me. I then throw up and my asthma kicks in. Where was everyone else that I worked with? I could hear cars leaving and I felt like I was in crazy town. And again, I just felt really helpless and doomed. Someone picks me up. I don't really know who because blood is now gushing from my broken teeth as well as my broken nose. I couldn't breathe and I was hyperventilating now. The next thing I know, I'm in a trunk and all I'm hearing is laughing. This is the moment where I think I'm going to die. I'm thinking to ask whoever it is to let me go after we get to wherever we're going. But I still can't breathe and I'm mostly just thinking that I'm just going to die here. I then start to hear mumbled noises. My pulse is now pounding in my ears and I can't really hear anything but my terrible breathing. This goes on like this forever. It feels like we're moving faster and faster, and we're now swerving severely. I feel like I'm going out all the way, and then out of nowhere, we stop, and really violently. My body and all of the crap in the trunk then move, and I'm even more hurt than before. What happened next is pretty much just gone from my memory. But from what I know that actually happened was this. John got pulled over for whatever reason. He panicked, led a chase, and then lost when we hit a giant boulder going very fast. The girls in the front of his old hoopty were severely injured. He was injured too, but he had a seatbelt on, and the rest of the girls didn't. When the cop caught up with them, someone in the back seat said I was in the trunk. They gave her credit for that when the charges rolled out. When I eventually woke up, someone was putting an oxygen mask on me, while someone else was doing EMT things. As it would turn out, John had a former wife a couple of towns over. She came up pregnant, and he didn't want a fourth kid for the state to ride his ass about. She told all of her friends how terrible he was and how violent he was, and when she was about 8 months pregnant, she apparently tripped and fell down the stairs. They couldn't get any charges to stick, though. He had witnesses say that he wasn't home around the time of her death, but we all know that he totally did it. He then went up for all the drug charges possible, plus kidnapping, plus statutory rape, plus every other charge known to man. None of the other girls copped to what he had planned on doing with me. They were all charged as well for what they did to me, most of them being charged as adults. I flipped on my mom and she went to jail as well. I finally did get out of that horrible town. Jimmy and I kept in touch for a bit. Then I heard the FBI and some other government entities were in my hometown because the cops were on the take and also dealing drugs. Thanks for sticking with me. I never told anyone else this story when I moved cross country. Even my own husband doesn't know. I'm honestly just really happy that I'm finally free from all of that. I'm really lucky that I survived. I honestly could have been killed that day. Thank God I wasn't.
This story takes place on July 20th, 2012. The day that the shooting in Aurora, Colorado happened. Me, my friend, and my brother had all purchased tickets for the midnight showing of The Dark Knight Rises. At 11:30, we decided to go to the McDonald's a few minutes away, so we wouldn't have to spend a fortune on food and drinks at the theater. After we finished our meal, we started our walk back to the theater. When we were about a third of the way there, I saw a guy in his mid-20s who had followed us since we left McDonald's start to pick up the pace. It's important to point out that I was only 14 at the time, but my friend and brother were only 16, so we're not going to be able to fight a guy if he tried to rob us. I told my friend about the guy, and he told me not to be worried. I remember that we were talking about whether or not Batman would die in the movie when all of a sudden we heard loud footsteps. We turned around and the guy was following us, pointing a gun at us. He told us he wanted our wallets and phones, and we immediately handed them to him. My brother had kept the tickets in his wallet that the guy had just taken. The crazy part was that this guy had looked me dead in the eyes and even said, "Even the worst things have something good about them." We all stood there confused until he walked off into an alley. We ran back to the theater, and when we got there, they were all sold out of tickets. We headed back and found out in the morning what had happened. Just thinking that we could have been three of the 12 victims sends chills down my spine. As for what that guy said, I don't know if he had a sick sense of humor or what that was about. Even though we didn't get a great look at the guy, I can confirm that it wasn't the same guy as the shooter. Regardless of why he said that, I don't know. But I've saved that in my mind.
I've never had to shorten my experiences and tell them in detail, so forgive me if I come across like I'm rambling. My family has, for as long as I can remember, been terrorized by an entity we call the Cracking Man. My first encounter with him personally was when I was 5 years old. I awoke in my room and my eyes were adjusted to the darkness and the shadows formed from the moonlight beaming through the window, and I noticed movement. I held my breath and tried to focus. In the abyss of the darkness, in the abyss of the darkest corner of my room was a blackness that seemed to swallow up all light and was blacker than everything else in the room. Then the sound began. At first, it reminded me of bubble wrap. Then I imagined it was the sound of someone grinding their teeth to the point they were cracking and popping and crumbling under the force of the pressure. All the hairs on my body began to rise, and the last bit of air in my lungs was forced out in a half gasp and a petty attempt at a scream which failed miserably. Emerging from the blackness was a tall, dark man. Well, it resembled a man, but it in no way was human. Its bones crumbled as it jerked and limped and twitched towards my bed. The sound it made with every footstep resembled what I could imagine a butcher sounds like hacking through meat bone and cartilage. Its body was mangled and broken, almost beyond recognition, but it still limped closer and closer, and then its faces came into view. It stood swaying side to side, pressing against the bottom of my bed. It raised a long, spindly arm towards me, and its wrist and hand hung limply. As it raised its hand and extended its finger to point at me, I could hear the bones in its wrist and the fingers crunch and pop. The sound turned my blood to ice, and I was frozen in place. The face, though, was the most soul-crushing and fear-inducing thing I have ever saw. It slowly opened its mouth, and it got wider and wider as it smiled maniacally with spit and blood and half-broken teeth hanging from its mouth. It reached up to its mouth and ripped a tooth from its socket, and the pop echoed in the darkness and throughout the house. Somehow, its smile got larger. He then proceeded to flick the tooth at me, and I ducked to avoid it. When I looked back, though, he was gone. I wish this was my last time seeing him, but unfortunately not. He comes back regularly, and every time he flicks a tooth at me before vanishing. I came to learn many members of my family have been visited by him throughout their lives, and even as far back as my grandfather when he was just a boy. The problem is, he has a special interest in me, and I'm the only one he has flicked teeth at. And I am the only one he's flicked teeth at in the dead at night. The reason I'm writing this now is that when he smiled on his last visit, he had only 4 large, deformed, rotten teeth left. In my heart, I know when he reaches the final tooth, something awful is going to happen to me. I don't know where to turn or what to do, but if I make it out of this and find some answers, I'll be sure to inform everyone, especially those who might be terrorized by him too, or the people he might have on his list to visit next.
So throughout the entirety of the 9th grade, I was homeschooled. Not for any particular reason, I don't think. Like, it's not as if my parents were super religious or anything. Although, my mom did attend church occasionally. Myself and my siblings were schooled at home partly because my mom had a master's degree in education, so she was more than proficient in making sure we had the proper syllabus. We also moved around a lot, and when I was a teen, so I guess that probably would have something to do with it too. It was a pretty cool environment though. It was an interesting time in my life. We all learned a lot whilst moving and having a lot of fun. We had a great deal of one-on-one time with our teacher and lots of time to be alone and stuff like that. We spent a lot of time outdoors or just whatever we wanted so long as we weren't watching TV. I remember those years quite fondly. But by the time I hit 10th grade, I was sent to an all-boys private school. It was the sort of place where you had to wear a shirt and tie every day. There was a country club across the highway. It was a way out in the suburbs, but it was pretty nice, I guess. I'm pretty sure you know the kind of place I'm talking about. Anyway, on my first day of school, I was sent through orientation, which included an audition of sorts with the choir director. The school was very small, you see, and such a small pool of applicants, the choir director was pretty much free to choose whoever the hell he liked for the boys' choir. A group of about 29th to 12th grade boys who were taught to sing all this super grim Gregorian stuff. As my mother was a church-going woman, I had actually sung in one or two choirs previously, so I had a fair bit of vocal training and range. So it kind of goes without saying the director of the choir thought I was it. He accepted me into the choir on the spot. I was flattered, but soon realized that I was somewhat unique for someone with my talent. My voice had yet to drop. I was only in 10th grade, so I was an alto. Yeah, I know, I was a really late bloomer, but I'm, you know, over it now, and so should you. So, as you can imagine, I was more than a bit embarrassed for a boy trying to fit in at a new school. Anyway, I soldiered on through the 10th grade, until sometime around Christmas break, when it was announced that, for the boy choir play, we would be putting on some sort of Wizard of Oz rendition. When it was announced, during assembly one day, it barely took a few moments for me to understand where it was going. The entire grade knew the cast before it was announced. 4 months into my first year of a real school ever, I was informed that I would be playing the role of Dorothy, ruby slippers and all. And despite me refusing at first, I did play Dorothy. Ruby slippers, pigtails, necessary homosexual implications, and third grader dressed as Toto and all. In front of the entire school. You don't know embarrassment until you sing Somewhere Over the Rainbow to a crowded auditorium of all male squash players. It was the most terrifying, humiliating event of my entire life. I puked beforehand out of pure nervousness, and I puked afterwards out of pure shame. Not long after I dropped out of school and continued to be homeschooled until I was able to take the pre-college SATs, I just couldn't carry on at that school. This has honestly been the most disturbing story I think I will ever share. This story happened to me when I was 17 years old. I am a female. It was a warm summer night. Me, my sister, and my two cousins were sitting on a balcony that's covered with glass all over. But you can open the windows to let some air in. I live in a small villa, so to enter the balcony, you have to open a small gate which leads to a small garden. Then there is a glass door that leads to the glass balcony. We usually always left the garden door open, since we live in a safe neighborhood. So, we were hanging out there at about 3 a.m., having some food and chatting. My cousins asked me to go get some charcoal from the kitchen since we had a hookah on. Hookahs and shishas are common in our culture. The charcoal I got wasn't well lit, so I decided to go outside to air it out and make it light up more. I was wearing a mini shorts and a shirt at the time. I went out to the garden and I was lighting the charcoal up. My back was to the trees and bushes behind me, and I was looking at our garage. As soon as I got out, I had this uneasy feeling that someone was watching me. I'm sure you know the feeling. I looked right and left, but there was no one there that I could see. So I brushed it off, since I thought I was just being paranoid. Because it was really late at night and the neighborhood was too quiet. I got back into the house and into the balcony. My sister was on her phone. She lifted her head up and her face just went pale. She suddenly started screaming, "Who are you? What are you doing here?" I was shocked, and my cousin started screaming. I looked to my left looking at the window and I saw a tall, heavy man running out the front gate. Moments later, we heard our neighbor scream. Turns out, she was sitting on her front porch and she saw a man running and some girls screaming, so she was pretty freaked out by that. Our neighbors and my brother and dad were awoken by our screams and the police were called. My brother went running in the street looking for him, but he was not found. When the police arrived, they patrolled around my neighborhood, but they didn't find anything. My sister was called out to the police station to describe how he looked since she was the only one who saw him. At first, he had his head peeking at us creepily as we sat down. But the more that she noticed that he was stalking me, the more she got more freaked out. He was apparently only a foot or two behind me. The police cars advised my parents to not let me walk home alone in the neighborhood, since they were afraid that he could be trying to kidnap me or worse. A couple of days later, my mom was driving around the neighborhood and she found a man with the same characteristics that my sister described. He was working on the garden of our two neighbors. My sister was too scared to identify him, so he was not captured. I just can't help to think that what would have happened if he grabbed me. I was so oblivious that he was even there. God knows what his intentions were. I never sat down even near the door when I was alone at night ever again. Thanks for watching this video. I hope you enjoyed these creepy and downright disturbing, scary stories sent in by viewers just like you. If you enjoyed these stories, please hit that like button as it helps me out a ton. The more likes this video gets, the more YouTube promotes it to fresh new eyes, and that helps me out a ton. If you're new to the Swamp, why not join us? Hit that subscribe button and turn on notifications to never miss a new video, as I upload them almost every single day. All things natural and supernatural. Much love to my friends, Southern Cannibal and Maschino, for helping me read two stories today. If you enjoyed their voices, please be sure to check out their channels in the description down below. I'm sure you'll enjoy their channels. They both upload great videos on all things scary. If you guys have a story that you would like to share in a future video, be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the Swamp. It's stories like yours that help keep this channel going. If you're not aware, you can download your favorite Swamp Dweller scary stories on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, and just about everywhere else you find podcasts. Thank you guys, as always, for supporting the Swamp even during this break of content. I'll see you guys soon with another creepy video.